From various points in and around beautiful Louisville, Kentucky, this is Blasphemy in the Bluegrass.
I'm your host, Michelle Landrum, and my co-host today is Angela Borner. Joining us on the podcast today are Angie Lowell, Ellen Tisch's daughter, Katie Watts, Regina Hobbs, and Monica Burns. Blasphemy in the Bluegrass is the weekly podcast that focuses on state-church separation issues with an emphasis on the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We also promote positive atheist culture. We are sponsored by Black Atheists and Agnostics of Louisville, Louisville Atheists and Freethinkers, the Freedom From Religion Foundation Kentucky Chapter, and the Kentucky Secular Society. You can find us on Facebook and at blasphemyinthebluegrass.com. What's happening this week in the atheist world, Angela?
We are back with the second special edition of Atheist Women. We will keep talking about issues that are of special interest to the women of our community. Since our first special has been so well received, as we noticed by both the comments of women in the community, as well as an increase in the number of listeners, we'll be back with more Only Women episodes in the future.
That's great to hear. On our last episode, we announced that the YouTuber, The Skeptic, was visiting us for Atheist Day. We had a full room. The presentation was fun, and he was very nice. We want to thank everyone who attended.
Yay!
What's the next big event on the schedule for us?
This year, we'll be back at Springfest at All Louisville. We'll give more details in the next episode, and also pay attention to the Facebook page of our sponsors, as well as the meetup group of Louisville Atheists and Freethinkers.
We hope to repeat the great experience from last year. And I think you wanted to talk about Rebecca Watson, right?
Well, not about her specifically, but yeah. The Skeptic made a video a few days ago called The Orthodox Jewish Sex Strike to Let Women Divorce. I love this story because it has reminiscences of Lysistrata, the Aristophanes comedic play. I had the role of Lysistrata in a small theater company like a lifetime ago, so I'm familiar with the story.
There's nothing like the literary work by the authors during the classical period in Greece to realize that the authors of the Bible weren't as good as other ancient writers. Anyway, what is the Watson story about?
It's about the divorce of Orthodox Jewish people living in the US. And even though we'll summarize the idea, please watch the Skeptic video. She explains the whole issue in a more detailed and fun way. By the way, I invited Angie to help me talk about it.
Hello, ladies. I'm so happy to be back.
Welcome, Angie.
For those who are unfamiliar, I'll clarify first that under traditional Jewish law, women cannot get a divorce unless the man grants it. It is difficult to get an exact number of women who have been denied a divorce because of the usual lack of transparency of these communities.
This patriarchal rule is disturbing, to say the least.
Absolutely. Well, one woman from Upper New York, Malky Gold Berkowitz, has been trying unsuccessfully to divorce her husband for 4 years now. She went public about her situation and other Orthodox women, led by Instagrammer and feminist Adina Sash, rallied to help her. When they realized their protests weren't getting results, Sash launched a new offensive. And that's what reminds us of Lysistrata, a sex strike. For real. Although, only on Friday nights.
Why only on Friday nights?
As Watson explains, tradition calls for couples to have sex every Friday. So, in protest, these women refrain from it until Malky is freed. This is a way to make the issue noticeable to their husbands, in the hopes that they talk to the rabbis and get things changed.
But as many of you already guessed, all this hasn't come without resistance from men and some of their institutions, like the Orthodox Union.
No surprise there. We will link Rebecca Watson's video for more details. What else have you got for me?
At the beginning of March, the White House revealed its federal budget proposal for next year, and there's something that civil rights groups are not happy about. Freedom From Religion Foundation, American Atheists, American Civil Liberties Union, American Humanists, and many, many more.
What are they protesting against?
They want to make sure that the Weldon Amendment is not included in the 2025 budget. This amendment, in their own words, has misused religion to intimidate states that seek to protect abortion care by threatening critical federal health funding. It also emboldens healthcare entities to deny patients abortion care and coverage, prioritizing healthcare providers' personal beliefs over patient care.
They believe that even though this has been an issue for far too long, since 2005 actually, it's more critical than ever to eliminate it, given the flourishing of state laws to ban abortion. I think we can all agree with them, and we wish their letter would cause an effect in the Biden administration, since it seems like this is a pro-choice government.
We will link to that letter in the show notes. Here to make a final comment in this segment, we welcome Ellen.
Hello, girls. I just want to remind you all that it's important to be aware and alert of the laws that are approved for or under discussion. For that, I would like to insist that you can check the American Atheist State Legislature Tracker, select Kentucky, and find out bills under discussion. Bills such as Kentucky House Bill 650, introduced by Republicans, declaring an emergency which would allow the state's public schools to offer biblical literacy courses as language arts courses. Or on the other side of the spectrum, Kentucky House Bill 330, introduced by the Democrats, to prohibit practices like inversion, reparative, aversion, or reorientation therapy for individuals under 18 who struggle with sexual orientation or gender identity.
We certainly cannot fight against or defend what we don't know about. We will link the tracker again. Thank you, Angela, Angie, and Ellen. This week, Katie Watts will again bring us the Freedom From Religion Foundation news update.
Hello, this is Katie Watts, affiliated member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, for this week's update. In the U.S. Supreme Court's first major abortion case since the far-right majority overturned Roe v. Wade, the justices heard a lawsuit that could threaten access to abortion medication. To begin, the High Court is tasked with deciding whether the litigating groups and doctors have the right to challenge the FDA's regulations that expanded the use of mifepristone, the initial drug of the two-drug protocol to induce an abortion. FFRF filed an amicus court brief asserting that the litigants lack standing to sue. Rather than state that they have religious objections to the drug, some anti-abortion physicians claimed that at some point they may need to treat a patient suffering from unlikely complications caused by mifepristone. The FDA has taken no regulatory action relating to these doctors that threatens their rights of conscience, FFRF contended. The court will examine whether the FDA's changes beginning in 2016 to make the mifepristone pill easier to obtain were arbitrary and capricious. The lawsuit in Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus FDA was filed by a nationalist legal outfit called Alliance Defending Freedom. It represents anti-abortion advocates who judge-shopped Christian nationalist extremist Matthew Kaczmarek for U.S. District Judge, a nomination FFRF actively opposed. The same district judge issued the ruling in April 2023 to ban mifepristone altogether around the nation. The Supreme Court quickly decreed at the time that mifepristone would remain available under current rules until the litigation concludes. The 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals last August then ruled to limit abortion medication to just 7 weeks of gestation instead of 10 and to ban telemedicine and mail order shipments for abortion pills, at which point the Supreme Court had no choice but to hear the case. Medication-induced abortion is extremely safe. The death rate is 0.0005%. For comparison, the risk of death from penicillin is 4 times greater, and the risk of death from Viagra is nearly 10 times higher. More than 5 million U.S. women have used mifepristone to end pregnancies in the past 23 years, with a serious complication rate of less than 1%. Abortion medication accounted for 63% of all abortions in the United States in 2023, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Arguing on behalf of the FDA, Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogger addressed serious concerns regarding the doctrine of both standing and the wide-reaching effects that this case could have if the court determines that the anti-abortion doctors indeed have the standing to attack the FDA's regulations. Regarding the anti-abortion doctors' theories, Prelogger stated that they rest on a long chain of remote contingencies and fail to demonstrate an actual concrete injury. FFRF's amicus brief had echoed many of these same concerns. The conservative justices were skeptical of the FDA's findings and expertise regarding the safety of dispensing mifepristone via mail and telehealth. It appears that the justices, in particular Justice Samuel Alito, are willing to masquerade as medical professionals. the conservative majority was unwilling to press the attorney for the anti-abortion doctors and focus questions on tangential issues. Disturbingly, Justice Neil Gorsuch asked Prelogger whether the court should revisit offended observer standing in the established clause context. However, Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson peppered Alliance Defending Freedom's attorney Aaron Hawley with questions regarding the doctor's actual injuries and standing. Justice Jackson asked Hawley to identify even a single instance where one of the doctors was unable to object to and refrain from performing or being involved in an emergency room visit resulting from mifepristone complications. ADF's attorney seemed unable to directly and adequately answer. Surprisingly, Justice Amy Coney Barrett repeatedly asked whether the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine had concretely demonstrated harm justifying associational standing in this case. Prelogger stated that it was very telling that respondents didn't have, quote, a specific example of any doctor ever having to provide this care in violation of their conscience. Based on oral arguments, it seems the justices are searching for a way out of the mess the Fifth Circuit created. It's anyone's guess exactly how the opinion will unfold, but it's clear that the ultra-conservative majority is skeptical of the FDA's arguments. Will the court fashion an escape hatch for itself that allows it to handle this case without harming its own interests and further galvanizing the public against it? We'll find out by the end of June. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is applauding the work of Florida educators, activists, and legal advocates that led to the recent defanging of the state's infamous Don't Say Gay law. Don't Say Gay, which was first passed 2 years ago to national outrage, stated that discussions of sexual orientation or gender identity may not occur in kindergarten through grade 3 or in a manner that is not age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. Since its introduction, opponents have noted that this vague language could and likely would effectively act as a total prohibition of any non-cis heteronormative expression of gender or sexual orientation in educational settings. Many teachers in same-sex relationships or transgender noted that as written, the law would prohibit them from sharing even the most benign details of their life or having family photos at their desk. A burden that would not be shared by their cisgender and heterosexual colleagues. Parents also expressed concerns that the law would limit students' ability to effectively socialize with their peers, as the law could easily be interpreted to make mentioning their parents or other family members impermissible. Since the law's introduction, 7 states have passed similar legislation explicitly censoring LGBTQIA+ related discussions in the classroom, and 9 others have passed laws restricting students' access to knowledge about sexual orientation or gender identity. Thanks to a multi-year organizing campaign, the law has now been clarified to only prohibit discussions of gender identity and sexual orientation during instruction. This means that teachers are permitted to answer questions or display affirming materials in their classrooms, and students may openly discuss gender and sexuality in school-appropriate manners and forums, such as in the context of a gay-straight alliance or casual conversations with their peers. FFRF Equal Justice Works fellow Kat Grant notes, while this settlement doesn't go far enough to protect the right to receive age-appropriate education regarding sexual orientation and gender identity, it is still a massive step in the right direction. Kat Grant's legal fellowship focuses on the intersection of LGBTQIA+ rights and state church separation. Kat Grant adds, organizing on the state and local level is still critical if we're going to continue to effectively counteract the effects of the Christian nationalist movement. FFRF and its related lobbying arm, FFRF Action Fund, have been closely tracking the religious motivations of the anti-LGBTQIA+ movement for years. We have seen a massive increase in legislators inserting their anti-LGBTQIA+ religious beliefs into laws in recent years, comments FFRF co-president Annie Laura Gaylor. Many kids who are not straight and or cisgender already face intense stigma from their peers and family. Teachers are often a bastion of hope for them. This settlement will reopen doors for LGBTQIA+ youth to receive life-saving support, and we are certain that we will see similar progress across the country in the coming months and years. Check out more important stories like these at ffrf.org, and please consider joining us in donating so these awesome people can keep fighting the good legal fight against the relentless endeavors of Christians to flood our schools and laws with their religious intentions. Remember, the only way to keep religion and government separate is to never stop paying attention and to continue to fight. You can find the Freedom From Religion Foundation Kentucky chapter and reach Ed Hensley at ffrfky@gmail.com, or you can join the Facebook group at FFRF Kentucky.
Ellen joins Monica and Regina again for this week's rant.
Hey, y'all. How's everybody doing?
Hey.
Hey.
Doing good. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well. So, for this episode, guys, we're going to get into Liberty University. Liberty University is a Christian, I guess, evangelical type college in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Sorry about Jerry Falwell.
Yes, the president of the school, yeah. Jerry Falwell Jr., I think. He is definitely the president. This university is just, it's bullshit anyway. It's a terrible place, but this will outline why it's a terrible place as we get into it. They were just recently fined $14 million by the United States Department of Education for failing to comply with a federal law called the Clery Act, I think.
Yes.
Requires them to maintain records of campus crimes and to warn the community of any kind of dangerous crimes that have taken place on campus. And then the settlement also required them to spend $2 million on campus improvements for safety. And then they're going to also be monitored by the feds for like 2 years. I'm surprised that they got anything, honestly, because of the way that, you know, they typically handle anything to do with Christian schools and things like that. That's why they've been able to go around with this for so long. But I was stunned to see that they actually got this fine, although I don't know what you guys think, but I think that there should be more, not just these fines. That's one thing that should have happened. But this was swept under the rug, and the way that people on campus discouraged women from even reporting their sexual assaults, there should be some criminal charges here as well for not protecting the students.
I definitely agree with that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is the epitome of the good old boys club right then and there. Mm-hmm. I'm not completely surprised that this was dealt with during this administration. Mm-hmm. Although, ironically, I think if we have a change of administrations at the end of this year, it'll probably get wiped off the books again.
Mm-hmm.
And hands off.
Definitely.
I could see that. I mean, you know, when you start selling $60 Bibles.
Yeah.
Haven't read one ever.
Doing that, then I think that you are really grifting real hard for the Christians. And so I can see this being just blown away, even if they pay the $14 million, because that's nothing for this.
No.
There should be criminal charges. Well, let me back up a little bit. This started 2 years ago. It came about because a student, her name was Elizabeth Axley. She was in her first year of college. She came forward and said that she had been raped on campus. And campus officials ignored the fact that she had reported it and been raped. And they also threatened to punish her for breaking the school's moral codes. Yeah.
Of course
it was her fault.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Completely. I mean, they were pretty much saying that verbatim.
Yeah.
That this was true. She had told her resident advisor about it. And they advised her not to report the rape to school officials because she'd broken those school rules by drinking and associating with boys, and instead suggested that they pray together.
Of course, because that's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been attacked, physically attacked. Yeah. Let's pray about it instead of holding your attacker accountable for attacking you.
Let's pray to figure out where you went astray because you were attacked.
Exactly. She reported it immediately. They had taken her to the hospital. She had a rape kit done. She had bruises present. They took pictures. She had taken pictures herself. And the lead investigator on her case immediately began asking her why she went to the party and wanted to know how much she had to drink.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause this is completely on you. You shouldn't have been there in the first place because there were boys and you can't drink and be around boys because they get to do whatever if you're drinking, apparently.
Right.
Yeah, it's your fault that it happened to you. I mean, it's victim blaming to the max.
I was going to say, I'm surprised they didn't ask what she was wearing that night.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They didn't write that in the story I saw, but I would not be surprised if that was not considered as well. That would be shocking if it wasn't.
Right.
So they had this investigation, you know, like 5 months later. Why is this taking so long? They bring her back in and they have her case file there and they have removed the pictures. They said that they were too explicit. Dead ass serious. They said her pictures of her bruising, which showed the fact that this assault had happened, were too explicit. And they really removed this evidence. That's why I say that there should be criminal charges. How do you get to just toss out her evidence?
Right. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's infuriating. But she was not the only one, obviously. This wouldn't have come down the way that it did had it just been her. They had like 50 other students and staff and numerous other cases where they had discouraged women from reporting their sexual assaults on campus. This is why this is happening on your campus. You're not holding anyone accountable.
If anything, you're almost encouraging it.
You definitely are. You've got these predators on campus and you're not warning them. That's partially also why they got the $14 million settlement, because they were supposed to warn the students of any kind of crimes or anything like that. Especially, you're leaving the attacker on the loose, you know.
Yeah.
And they're not even telling kids on the campus that these things are taking place.
Well, didn't I see something in an article about it where they didn't even report like gas leaks and things like that?
Yes.
They were not telling these kids anything. Terror attacks, you know, like I guess like threats where someone would call in and make a threat, or gas leaks and all that. They weren't telling these kids any kind of thing. They acted as though there was no harm on this campus.
God's going to take care of it.
I guess that's what they thought.
And you have this as opposed to, we got to let these people run their own school, as opposed to, we can't let these schools let children develop in their own way with gender and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. They had her and a couple of other students had to even sign forms to say that they were aware that they had broken the school's code of conduct by drinking.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, this one was, I'm going to really piss y'all off. Being in a state of undress with the opposite sex. You just got your clothes ripped off.
Right.
And yeah. You are in trouble for being in a state of undress.
Well, they should have had stockings on if they'd had magic underwear on, like the Mormons wear.
Right.
More like a chastity belt.
Right.
I don't know. It's just like, how do you sit in front of a young person who is telling you this kind of thing and that's your response? You're going to blame her for being in a state of undress when she would not have been if her attacker hadn't ripped her shit
off. Her clothes off. Yeah.
Right.
Even one of the victims was even fined like $500 and made to go to counseling.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The victims were completely being held accountable and they weren't even looking for these men that attacked them. They weren't.
Right.
And then the thing is,
checks like, clear.
Broke the moral codes. You had, you know, this unwanted sex, but there's no accountability for that person having had this forced sex.
Jezebel's playing out in the modern world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He did it too. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
She was a temptress. What could he do?
Right. There is no way. Even if I were a Christian and the most fundy Christian out there,
right,
that I would send my damn child, my daughter, to that school.
Hell no.
They have handled this. But they won't see it that way.
Mm-mm.
Many of them probably thought the university handled that properly.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Mm-hmm. And they even had one guy. He was the senior vice president of communications at the university. He wanted to make a statement from the university once the story broke on, I think, ProPublica. He wanted to put out a statement and he encouraged the university to do that. They fired him.
Not a surprise either.
Mm-hmm. They fired him for even just suggesting that they just say something.
Right.
Speak on it. These people are about to write a story about your university not being safe because girls are being attacked. And you just say, mm-mm, how dare you? You're fired.
Yeah.
They handled this like the worst possible way. So I'm glad that it's in the headlines that they are being held accountable and have to pay this fine. But there's so much more that needs to be done.
Yeah. That fine, $14 million for what they rake in.
Exactly.
That's like $14,000 something to normal people.
Right. It doesn't hold anyone accountable for how they handled her. I mean, that lead investigator, the resident advisor, telling her to shut up and pray. No one is held accountable. And it's people who did this. It's not like, you know, the whole thing about, okay, we're going to find the university and they got in trouble. That's arbitrary. That's like, oh,
right.
You know, an overall thing. Specific people handled these investigations, swept them under the rug, pulled out evidence. I mean, I was glad to see it, but it doesn't carry the weight that they think it does. They think this is going to be
for them. They should lose their public funding as well.
I think they're private.
Of course, these days, that don't matter either.
But yeah, now,
people that go there, you know how like you can get like a federal aid to go. No, you can't go to this school on this amount of money because they failed to XYZ.
There's always ways that even private schools get to receive federal funds in some capacity. Yeah. So I'll have to look into that and get back with you guys on it. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them receiving some kind of money somewhere in some way, because they skirt around all the time. It's what they want to do, you know, with charter schools and things. They still want to have the private element, but then still get the funding. So,
right.
But either way, they have tons of money, and $14 million is not going to be anything that deters them.
They'll make it back.
Oh, yeah.
When a school can spend $8 million to fire a coach, like it's coming out of the pocket instead of, you know, an actual suffering.
Right.
$14 million, just a little bit more.
Yeah.
This is one of the biggest issues I have with Christianity, especially being a woman. I don't understand how women can be Christian in a lot of instances, because look at how they view you. Mm-hmm. Look at how they view an assault on you. And it doesn't matter. Like, okay, yeah, she went to a party and drank, but how does that turn into you now are open to be assaulted? And then everyone tells you that you deserved it. And you're now in trouble because, you know, you were there.
Right. It falls right into line with you deserve to be punished for who you are and what you do. They have no problems with punishment. And that's just what God let happen to teach her a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's trash when a man has that view, but it's like double trash when a woman.
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Oh, absolutely.
This is you we're talking about specifically. They can do this to you.
Right.
Because like you pointed out, they may have even asked her, like, what was she wearing? That's always the go-to. But in a lot of instances, I mean, women are being raped in burqas. It doesn't really matter what you have on to a rapist. He's a rapist. I mean, it doesn't matter. All of them. Anytime you get into the fundamentalist thing, especially, you're just left out to dry. They just...
Your tools for reproduction.
Exactly. Right.
Again, good on them for actually looking into this and then finding them, but it's just not enough.
No, it's not.
It's not. And this happens all over, all the time, not just at Liberty University.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Schools do it all the time. It's not just even Christian universities, to be honest. A lot of schools try to shield themselves from the truth of what happens on their campuses. They try to lie about it, sweep it under the rug, just so that they can keep new students coming in and having this faux sense of safety.
Right, yeah.
Well, it happens all the time. It was disgusting to get into the details of her story, and then to hear that there were over 50 other cases was just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
That's one school.
Yeah.
Right.
That's one school.
And that's probably not even half of the actual...
Yeah. That's the ones that have come to light at that school.
And this is the women that have reported it. There's so many instances where they don't report anything because of the consequences. No one's going to either believe you or they're going to blame you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's so many women who are just like, well, fuck it. I'm not going to say anything. I'll just try to move around away from that person. But I'm not going to say anything because I'm going to be punished.
Yeah, it's not worth it. Keep your head down and just try not to get in that position again. Mm-hmm. Is how they try to enforce it constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is it. Ugh. It was an ugly read. But I'm glad we got to talk about it and put it out there. And hopefully more women will start to look at that religion like, why am I here if this is how I'm seen?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything right there.
Yeah.
People got to go, why is this being done to us? Why are we going through this to be second class?
We'll see what goes on with this. I think it's great that they're going to monitor them for 2 years. That's
yay.
Right. Way. That's great. I think that's bullshit too, but you know.
Nah.
Anyway, do you guys have anything else?
Yeah, but the only other thing I got at the moment is this quote-unquote emergency in the Kentucky House about Bible literacy courses.
Oh.
House Bill 650. Basically, it says that it is an emergency that we should have elective social studies or language art courses on Hebrew scriptures, New Testament, or all of the above. Teach students knowledge of biblical content, characters, poetry, and narratives that are prerequisites to understanding contemporary society and culture, including literature, art, music, mores, oratory, and public policy.
I'm sure this includes the Quran, right? And the Book of Mormon and the Bhagavad Gita, right?
Book of Shadows. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, that's another piece of fun that's going on right now.
We need to dig into that. I need to look into that one.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, guys. I guess we'll wrap it up. And
okay.
See y'all next time.
All righty.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thank you.
We want to appreciate all the love and support that we receive from the community. Thank you for listening to Filthy Monkey Brains on Blasphemy in the Bluegrass.
And next, we will listen to more of the interesting conversation Katie, Angie, Ellen, myself, and Angela had about issues that matter to atheist women. Stay tuned for the second half of this debate.
Introduce the next topic that Ellen was already willing to talk about. I want to clarify that, for lack of a better term, I've always called myself a feminist. That doesn't mean I'm not gender egalitarian. This term is the most similar that I found for how I feel. But this last term doesn't really acknowledge the systematic discrimination of women throughout history. So anyway, when I study feminism, I noticed something curious. The exclusion of women from the literary canon or from the attribution of scientific discoveries, that's one of the main concerns of feminists. But at the same time, the movement itself traditionally have been excluding entire groups of women. So in the 90s, they introduced some racial and some queer perspective. By the way, another forgotten atheist, feminism, you cannot find it in any academic classification. It seems that feminism is not inclusive enough. They still have gaps with groups that are not the traditional cis, het, white, Western. And I would add to that religious, for the reason that I stated. We assume that women have at least a spirituality. She's gonna have to believe in something, which most women do, by the way. Also, we have witnessed the J.K. Rowling movement, an anti-J.K. Rowling. It looks like if you defend rights for women, you cannot defend trans women, and we will talk about that too if you want. So, well, my questions. Should atheist feminism be its own category? What do you think about this? Do you think that the feminist movement is working at representing the interests of minorities? And do you think that feminism has a future as a movement?
About atheist feminism, I don't know if I think it should be like its own category in and of itself. Honestly, I don't think there should be a religious or spiritual category to feminism as well. It is all about making things more equal for men and women. Now, do I think that that has not done very well, especially for minority groups? Absolutely. For a lot of reasons, predominantly racism, we do not move very fast or far, and it seems to hold things back. So anytime you have a minority group that's added, it's like there's this huge wage just pushing back so hard. Whereas if you are a white woman, you can push forward, you can get a little bit further. But if you add a minority group to that, there's so much backlash to that. That is what I see in my personal life. That is what I see in my community. That is what I see on national news, world news. I don't understand the mindset of why someone would think that way, for that to be such a big backlash on everything, but it is, and I've heard people's reasoning for why that is, but to me that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm gonna make a little break before you talk again. You wanna talk, which is good, by the way. Atheist feminism defends that the source of oppression comes from religion. If the general discussion of feminism towards equality, it doesn't matter if you're atheist or agnostic or religious or new age, you're gonna suffer the same. You're gonna have the same problems that any other denomination or a group of beliefs or whatever. But at least academically, they should study this. Because when I studied feminism, there was no word about how the Bible was oppressive and how the Bible treated, and other religious texts, not only the Bible, the Quran, how women are viewing that. And that's the base of our culture. In the case of the Western countries, we have
the Abrahamic beliefs.
It's an academic discipline, at least they should mention the source of inequality can go from religion, and I never heard that.
Where are they citing the source from?
They talk about that as a cultural restraint, that traditionally, and they...
They ignore. There's a wall built around the idea of religion being the cause of it.
Yeah, it's the way society works. They don't go to... Religion plays a big part in this. They don't talk about it. Even if the teachers are liberal, the canon, the way it's established, the way they teach feminism, I don't know if you have a different experience. So it needs atheist feminism to go and push that and say, hey, you are ignoring the elephant in the room. What's the source of oppression for women? Why aren't we talking about religion? And I can show you books that I have. Some of them are here in America. They don't say a word.
So where does that conversation start? If we're not in academia.
Here in the podcast, in our case, that's our speaker right now, but on private conversations, what can we do? We are not in academia.
But this is academia in its own way, because there's a discussion going on. If someone hears it, then it gets raised elsewhere.
Yeah.
You saying that makes me think that I wonder if religion was created to suppress women and minorities at the same time.
If it wasn't the whole reason, it was an important part of
it.
Yeah. The hate for other tribes and justifying genocide because they are not the chosen one by God. What do you think about the problem with feminists and trans people? What are your thoughts?
I first encountered this in the mid-90s, actually. I had known who I was since 1993. One of the things that happened in the year subsequent to that was the Michigan Women's Festival, which was music, various groups like Melissa Etheridge might appear there, or the Indigo Girls, Iris DeMent, different feminists and different lesbian acts. But there was one rule. Anyone who was born male was told to GTFO. I get it. I understand. The idea of women's safe zones makes perfect sense. But how do we communicate if you only want to insulate? Because, yes, we all have different experiences. But let's be honest. At this current moment, there's something like 8 billion different experiences on this world. The TERFs, the trans exclusionary radical feminists, tell us to F off because we exist. Then how are we ever going to find any accord?
We've seen in Spain that they approve a law that you can say just, I am a woman. You don't have to go through any transition. You don't need any doctor's notice. It opens the door to fraud. In some cases, like men who are being accused of domestic violence, we have laws specific for men who abuse women. They can go and self-identify as a woman, and the following day they cannot be judged by that law. They are judged by the regular domestic violence law, which is more favorable to them. The thing is that when we make a law, countries, I'm a country.
Society.
When we make the laws, we try to favor the majority. Sometimes these cases escape the rules. The thing is that, do we have to make people who self-identify as another gender suffer, because from time to time we have these cases that escape the system.
The weird part of the rhetoric today is you have those cases. The people that did these things did horrendous acts and have to pay for it. That's just the way it is. But then you have the people who at the same time compare, like the swimmer, Leah Thomas. To hear the girl from wherever school that was talk about how she got screwed out of her medal because this girl came in second. We were in a time where everything's too loud. There's too much noise going on everywhere.
Well, it's difficult to tell because it's on the other side, but what do you feel that some feminists, not all, I'm a feminist and I don't have any problem with trans women. Why this hate?
Is the threat that they're perceiving from trans women, is it a physical threat or is it more of a protect the feminine?
It varies from case to case.
Yeah. In the case of the festival that you were talking about in Michigan, was this an express restriction on men?
Well, it was the women's festival. And this was the 90s. I mean, we were still evolving to where we are today.
Okay, though.
Their idea was they wanted a women's safe space.
But you are a woman. You were a woman.
But they perceived
right, because...
So back to, were you a threat because...
Because I have the wrong plumbing.
I imagine it's probably a physical appearance of a physical threat.
Okay. Wow. So does that festival still exist?
I don't know if it does or not. Okay. I know a lot of artists who played there played it for a few years, obviously, but eventually were like, yeah, no. Even Amy Ray of the Indigo Girls at one point in time said something about not identifying as strictly female.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that if it does exist, they've evolved that.
What do you think about feminism? Does it have a future as a movement?
It has to have a future.
We're still not seen as equal in so many areas of life. There's no way that it could not just keep going. We have to.
Here's another interesting twist on my perspective on the whole thing. People look at me and go, why would you give up what you have? And how do I explain that?
Are they asking, why are you giving up the male privilege? Do you feel like you have?
In some cases, it's like, I wouldn't say a load off the shoulders, but I mean...
It's a different load.
Yeah. You really want periods? You really want the pain of childbirth? I'm like, I actually kind of do.
You were owed that, right? Kind of, you feel like you were going to owe that.
Well, I don't feel owed it, but I feel that's where I should have been to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
And feminism as its own existence has to continue. The idea of equity has to continue and be pursued. It's like with racism. We're nowhere near. There was a time I thought when President Obama was elected that I briefly thought racism was over. It didn't take me long to figure that was a joke.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton won. Please, can we go back and do that? We would be in the same shape now.
Yeah.
We would still be reacting to the reaction. That's why I keep saying we got to move forward. We got to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Individual moments have to go somewhere.
Well, I think especially now in the political climate.
Yes.
We've already lost footing.
Yes.
We can't give up. We've got to press on.
The reason we lost footing, the progressives truly need to learn this. We need to go for every position available from dog catcher on up and fill in those spots because that's how it got taken from us. That's how the nation was taken from the majority of people.
But usually all the social movements, like for example happens in the 60s here, feminism and racial equality and sexual, you know, queer movement, it all happened more or less at the same time. All the social movements came together. I think there's been a deliberate to break them apart.
Yes.
Because we are all separated. Like, feminism, it's been confronted to trans people, and I think it's been on purpose. And I think all the hate didn't come from the community at first.
Look at trans people and race to some extent, especially with black males that identify as cisgender male.
Yeah.
They're really kind of pushing it. Do we have evidence? No, that's the unfortunate part. That's like what I talked with that one friend of mine I worked with who was a young earth creationist. We have to recognize that we're not going to see eye to eye, but we have to find some place we can come to that we can talk from. And hopefully from there, we can come to an agreement of sorts. We may never agree on broad points, but how can we come together?
Well, if they separate us, into smaller individual groups, then they're still bigger than us.
Yes.
Yeah. But you group us all together, and now we're powerful.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right.
When we're strongest, well, we can see we're all different, but we're all standing up for each other.
They are very smart when it comes to screw us over.
I do ask John from time to time if he feels the pressure of being a cis white male. Not in that he holds this great, you know, responsibility. More in that, do you feel like you have to, and this sounds weird, defend yourself because he's not the asshole in the room?
Oh,
yeah. Right. He is the supportive, progressive, feminist man. And sometimes I worry about, in general, those men who do care. And make sure that those few are protected. He didn't feel attacked. He didn't feel,
Been one of those either. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
Nope. If anything, is that when he goes out there and does things with me, like I'm active in a lot of different groups, whether it's environmental, Planned Parenthood, Veterans for Peace, different things like that. He'll join me and he gets praised for being the husband that's there, being supportive and stuff. You know, just like the same thing with like dads, like moms and dads. Like, oh, mom's gonna do this, something goes wrong. Oh, mom, it's all mom's fault. Mm. Like, oh, dad took him to the park. He's such a great dad.
You know, we keep the child all day. That's our job.
Yeah.
The man does it. Well, he's going to babysit. No, you're not. That's your child. You're not babysitting.
Yes.
Yeah. You're parenting your damn child. You know. Yeah.
Mom, for example, when she came, he was like, your husband is changing diapers. He's such a good dad.
Yeah.
Girls, we have our last topic of the day. The political arena is a little bit weird, so to speak,
scary.
Right now, and scary. Mm-hmm. We had Roe versus Wade, the frozen embryos that Regina and Monica talked about a few episodes ago, the suspension of medical care for gender affirmation, which also impacts on the trans women. And we've seen attacks on women in general, cis and trans, everywhere lately, the laws in Tennessee about dressing as a woman in public and all that crap. Well, Monica described it in a rant as the theocracy they want. We were already warning the 2019 Kentucky Freethought Convention of the plan. They call it, it was called at that time, the Bleach. They keep changing the name to disguise it, but it's really what they're imposing religious ideas into political laws and stuff. Now that plan, as we can see, it's been materialized and they've been quite successful so far, right? Yeah. I want to know exactly who are we fighting. It's just a group. It's a group of groups. Who do you think they are? And what do you think is their final goal? What are they going to achieve at the end? Because if they keep pushing and pushing and pushing, how are we going to end? How can we fight this? I make a lot of questions. Who wants to answer any of them?
I think it's having conversations with people who are not like-minded, trying to find some kind of common ground so that they can see us as what we are, which are people.
Is it possible anymore to do that? Because the country is very polarized.
It is really hard. There are some people out there still. My best friend, he sees things very differently than me. He's a libertarian. He's a white man, so he has that privilege to be a libertarian. He and I have discussions about trans rights, about abortion, about all the things that either he or I hold dear to our hearts, and we have respectful discussions, and that's really where it needs to be. We're usually pretty chill, but yeah, it can get really hard with a lot of people out there. Not everybody is as level-headed as he or I may be, but is it possible with everybody? No. Is it possible with more than maybe what we're doing now? Yeah, I think so. It's just trying.
And sometimes it's got to be possible with one person.
Yep.
And then another person, and it works from there.
Have you been personally impacted by the change in the laws?
Not personally, but I know that my daughters will be. I've got my IUD, I'm almost at menopause, I'm good. I'm not having any more kids. If I do end up getting pregnant, I know what I'm going to do. But my kids, I worry about them. My daughters, they're teenagers. I'm terrified that they live in this world, in this environment that we live in currently. So in that way, yes.
How about you, Katie? What do you think we're fighting? How can we fight them?
What are we fighting? I think that's more abstract. I don't think there's one
group of people or anything like that. And I think a lot of times the people that are the most vocal are the ones that we're hearing and not the vast majority of people.
That happens.
So we're thinking it's more people that are against things just because of how vocal some people are. And it's amazing to me how the people that are super vocal, if you have like 10 people in a room and one person is very vocal, how we're so kind of trained, expected to go with that. We all want to be part of the group. So I don't know if there's a specific thing that we're fighting. Just like she was saying, conversation is something that everybody can do. If everyone has a discussion over things, will things change? I think so. I think it absolutely would change if everyone was discussing this and bringing it to the forefront. Do I think that everyone can have these discussions and things like that? No, I don't. And whether it's just because of their speaking ability, their relationships, or just life in general is just so hard. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to survive. So thinking about anything but survival can be very, very difficult. But if we don't, right, we're all going down together as a society. Because that's what gets me too, is that if you oppress anyone, the whole society suffers from that. But people can't see that. And I don't know if it's something that is just in humans, is human nature. Are we fighting human nature? I don't know. But I think we can get better.
I can go a little bit conspiracy theories here. Okay. There's a rule in politics that says follow the money when you don't understand the decision. If we reverse to the situation in which women stay home, men were the main breadwinner and everything, and we go back to the 50s, 60s, societies were reconstructing after World War II. There wasn't that many job positions, so we needed to rationalize them somehow. So one way of doing it is giving it to one gender. Can that be the reason? They know the future in the Western world. We destroyed companies and brought it to underdeveloped countries. We're gonna lose jobs because of robots and AI. Are they maybe using the religious excuse to control? Because in fact, what they see is that there's gonna be less job and they wanna give it them to men. Could it be a reason, or I'm going nuts with
who is they?
Well,
governments in general, like countries, people in power, the big companies.
The 1%?
Something I've seen is that the jobs go wherever the cheapest labor is.
Yeah, but we are used to a certain standard of living that we're right, not so willing to lose.
But the thing is, if things continue along the lines that they will, we will lose it. And at some point, we will become the cheap labor. We will choose to work for less.
Yes.
And I think
that's what Angel is saying, is yes, that, yes, you're right.
It's being manipulated in such a way. The battles.
What I wonder is, instead of being pushed with the sole objective of imposing Christianity because it's the right way, we want our country to be Christian because that's how what the founding fathers intended for some, they say that.
Mm-hmm.
They forgot that most of them were this. So, mm-hmm, are they pushing these ideas, disguising it, mm-hmm, as religious control when in fact, what they are trying to do is financial control.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they don't care. Jesus is down on the list of the reasons why Christianity is so important. Money is absolutely at the top of the list. Money, power.
It's trans women, it's feminism, it's all these topics together. And it's all being used to keep us struggling in our day-to-day. Mm-hmm. If people have to work two jobs just to survive, if you have to sit there and tell your kids, you're going to have to be a latchkey kid, you're going to have to deal with it, and you're going to have to be, not make me have to come to school. You're perpetuating this same pain. I don't think we'll ever get to the point where the men will be the breadwinner again. They'll use that, but I don't think that's ever going to be the actual objective.
I agree, because it usually takes two incomes for a household to survive.
Mm-hmm.
The thought of like one person being able to make enough to sustain a household right now, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
But with the reversal of Roe v. Wade, and maybe this is where you're going with this, are we expecting, you know, more children to be born into these families, and the women are going to have to be responsible for these children and stay home, and the men can kind of gobble up
these
jobs. Yes.
But my BFF actually was born in Eastern Kentucky. You have a lot of people there who basically have killed themselves over the years to put food on the table because of coal mines and things like that.
But those industries are going to disappear. We're talking about like that's the thing. We know that they have an end. For other kinds of energy, for example, the solar ones or the wind ones, you install a windmill and you don't need people. You need a person or two to operate it, and that's it.
But there's that, but that's also the reason why a certain party, you shall remain nameless, keeps mentioning that they're putting you all out of jobs.
Yeah.
It's because then they're throwing the wrench in the works of things that are going to actually improve things, that will continue the human race.
Yeah, they can manipulate voters from the coal mines. And that's they do it. Yeah, I know.
That's all the topics are for, is manipulation of power.
If you're not going to think about your own life, maybe your children or the next generation or the next generation of that, that's just terrible thinking. But if you're only thinking about yourself and the power that you will hold in your lifetime, that makes sense, right? But if you're thinking of the future of the whole society, if you're even your family and everything, it seems very, very short-sighted. Maybe that's who we're battling against, the ones that want the money and the power in their lifetime, and they care about nobody else.
That's exactly it. Because they're the ones going, we'll figure some way out of this, and y'all will pay the price for it.
Well, that's Trump. You think he gives a shit about those kids?
Elon Musk.
Or Jesus.
All right.
Yeah.
He doesn't even know how to hold the Bible.
I know.
You know, it would be interesting to know how many abortions that he's either paid for or promised to pay for and then, you know, bailed on that.
I bet the second is more than the first.
That's what John says. Yeah.
Well, it seems like we have a long way to go, ladies. And thank you very much for coming and giving me this very fun time. It was a pleasure to listen to you. Would you all like to do some final remarks as a conclusion of what we've been talking? How do you see the future?
We have to continue being bold, being strong, being loud, trying to get ahead of these assholes with their plans and their money and their penises. And make some headway. We've done a lot in the last 50 years, and so much was taken away from that progress a year and a half ago. And we need to continue. We need to keep detecting the future, whatever it is that they're going to do next. Because you know they've got shit up their sleeves. But we just need to keep standing up for us, standing up for each other. Keep going.
Yeah. Amen.
So we've got to roll that stone up again.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be struggle. Now, that doesn't mean we can't pay attention to what's going on in our own lives. We can't, you know, self-care, things like that can't be ignored. Because if we give everything that we are and have to others, we have nothing left.
Yeah.
And preservation is its own reward. And we got to remember that. Because there's no way forward if we're not there to see it.
Michelle?
We need to support each other, women supporting women, and not just the women that look like us or were born like us or even believe the same things we do, spiritually or not.
Thank you.
We do.
We do, yes.
Yeah, we need to support each other. We're going to get through it. It's an uphill battle. It is. I mean, and it's gotten worse last year and a half. Now we have to make up ground that we thought we'd already made up, but stick together. We're strong.
Yes. Please. So
we may make two steps forward and one step back, but the next one is going to be two steps forward. We're going to just move forward, and I'm thankful that we get this platform and all these women together to discuss these things, because again, that's the future of this, is discussing it and putting our views and thoughts for progress out there.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Manila.
What?
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors.
you, everyone, for listening to Blast Me in the Bluegrass.
In the comments section, let us know where you're listening from.
Also, if you have any questions or other comments, leave those in the comments section as well.
You can support us by joining KentuckySecularSociety.org.
Thanks for helping us maintain what's left of the wall of separation between church and state.
Until next time, adios, hasta luego.